Thanks for listening to the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Sponsored by FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com, the leader in single-day fantasy sports contests.
Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news, interviews from the biggest names in the industry, and game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll. Here's your host, the man with the best beard in daily fantasy, Crazy Gaby.
Howdy. Welcome. As the voice said, I am Crazy Gaby, hanging out here for a super sexy late-night podcast with my man, Hoop. There it is, 2410 Hoop. What is going on, brother?
Oh, not too much. Happy to be back here on the podcast. Two things before we get started here. Melky Cabrera continues to haunt me, and I appreciate all the people on Twitter updating me every at-bat when he's hitting a home run or an RBI double or just scoring a run. I honestly really do appreciate it because at this point the guy is 100% haunting me.
You do realize that the moment you decide to give in and start playing him, though, it's over.
Yeah, and, you know, I must say, I've held true to my word. So I made a vow to the listeners that I would not play him. This had to be over a month ago, I'd say.
Oh, it was. He was 2.2K on FanDuel when this...
Just a little update to that price. He is now at 3.5K. And I still have not played him. I'm refusing to do so. And you listeners can rest assured I'm going to hold true to my word and not play this guy for the rest of the season. I do not care what type of streak he goes on. If he hits home runs every day for four or five, I'm not doing it. So we'll see how long this goes on. But continues to haunt me, my friends.
I would contest that this is actually a good thing. Some people might say, well, Gaby and Hoop, the reason you guys won't play Melky Cabrera or Chris Colabello, this is terrible. Because, by the way, they update me all the time. There's a couple of people on Twitter who every single time Colabello looks at the camera, they're sending me a tweet letting me know that his hair looked good today.
It's the best, though. It makes it all much more fun.
I guess. It's definitely something. And I would contend, though, that this is what makes us human, right? Like, they want to make sure we're not some automated Roto Grinders, you know, androids that are doing the podcast. So the fact that we do have biases and we've let them be known, I think it's a good thing. You know you're getting authenticity is the name of the game here.
Absolutely. 100%. Second bit of housekeeping, Carlos Gonzalez is on fire.
Yeah, guess who said he was the perfect tournament fade tonight?
Was that you?
I'll see you guys later. Twitter account deactivated. This is the last piece of content I'm providing for Roto Grinders. I'm heading my way down to Mexico. No, listen, I knew he was on fire. I knew he's a good hitter. You know, regression goes both ways. A lot of times we think of regression as a bad thing. You know, whenever someone's regressing, it means they're getting worse. No, regression is a good thing, too. And Carlos Gonzalez is obviously a very plus hitter versus right-handed pitching over his career. So you knew at some point his season would turn around a little bit, a la Melky Cabrera.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to jab at you there. That's too soon. But you knew that was going to happen eventually. My point was first game away from Coors and his price tag being a little higher than it was previously. And if you're like me, you know, a lot of people take the weekends off. I'm coming into Monday looking back at what happened over the weekend and going, oh my God, I got to play a little Carlos Gonzalez.
Yeah.
In my opinion, he was probably one of the higher owned players in tournaments tonight, right?
I didn't get deep into tournaments. I focused a lot on the cash games and 50-50s. I'd assume so. And, you know, to be honest, I think the price actually came down quite a bit, obviously, leaving Coors. So I'm pretty confident he was relatively cheap. I think he was right around like 3K or something. So I'm guessing he was really high owned. I haven't really looked at the tournaments, but, the guy is, swinging a hot stick and, you know, I don't have the deep analysis of this, but just watching his plate appearance, it looks like that bat speed is back, and he has one of the fastest swings, and he can just turn on a ball. And from what I've seen the last couple of days, it just looks like the speed on the bat is back.
Indeed. And that obviously is going to – well, it is biting me in the ass currently as I look at my FanDuel app and I see what I'm currently winning. There's a reason my currently winning is less than my total entry fees. It's pretty much solely due to I'm not going to put all the blame on Carlos Gonzalez. I also went all in on Hanley Ramirez and Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah,
the only two Boston Red Sox, by the way, outside of Mike Napoli, who didn't play the whole game. The only two Red Sox who actually did nothing.
Yeah, kind of bizarre. 8 runs, 12 hits, and 2-3 hitter. Absolutely nothing. Unfortunate. Yep. But luckily, I guess if you played tournaments, you didn't have a chance. In cash games, they were very highly owned players.
Yeah, even in tournaments, I decided to. Hanley was kind of my all in pivot off of Carlos Gonzalez. So obviously, that did not work out very well. No. But we press forward on to today. Carlos Gonzalez, Melky Cabrera, we salute you, or at least Hoop salutes Carlos Gonzalez. I'm not sure if we're getting a salute out of you from Melky Cabrera.
No, sir. Can't do it. Not
absolutely
yet.
Not. Hoop, why don't you tell these good people? Why don't you tell these good people what they've won? Just kind of in Bob Barker mood, or what's the guy's name from Wheel of Fortune?
Drawing a blank on that as well.
Yeah, I have no. Is it Bob Saget? It's not Bob Saget, right?
No, that's the dude from America's Funniest Home Videos.
And Full House, right?
Full House as well. Yeah.
The guy's name is on the tip of my tongue. But anyways, swinging it over to one of the sexy models, and I remembered that we are poddles, myself being a plus-size male poddle and you being a super poddle.
Yes.
So why don't you tell these good people what they could win tonight at FanDuel.com, our sponsor site?
Yeah, quite a few things going on. Actually, 2 qualifiers into the WFBC. That is a very positive thing. And it's even more positive if you have a larger bankroll, because the price points on those are $1,065 and $200. So there's $1,065 and $200 qualifier into the WFBC. The seats are filling. I think we're down to about 13, 14 seats left. So if you desire to head out to Vegas to compete for $1 million, you're going to have to pick your spots here. Not too many more opportunities. The big tournament is the Super Monster. That's a $300 buy-in, $100K to first place. There's about 1,850 spots in that tournament, so that's certainly a nice payout. And we had the standard tournaments as well. $25 Grand Slam, that has a $175,000 prize pool, and I believe $20,000 to first place. So quite a bit of tournaments out there, a lot of money to be won. So make sure you check these out and hop in.
Hoop, you got me excited, dude.
Okay,
I'm now excited to play, and I also wanted to share one little pro tip, just the pro tip or a life hack or whatever you want to call it. So FanDuel changed their lobby a little bit, right?
Yes.
First of all, what do you think of that?
It hasn't actually updated for me. I'm not sure how this whole how the release is working, but I'm still on the old version.
Not VIP.
No. I'm not getting the VIP treatment. However, when I go to the live scoring page, my live scoring page is different, but my lobby is the same.
Yeah, I wonder if they roll that out maybe like alphabetical order. I have no idea, because H for Harbor may be higher than P for Pet. I don't know. Maybe something like that. But my thoughts were, some people were complaining that there are like less options or less things available. I'm not even sure if that's true. I haven't got a chance to play around with it a ton. But I will say this, and I want to give some kudos to FanDuel. This lobby looks great. It's much simpler. And in my opinion, one of the biggest drawbacks to being a new player when you come to one of these sites is it can look a little overwhelming when you go to the game lobby for the first time. Like if you've never played online poker, for you and I, we played online poker. The first time we saw a DFS lobby, we're like, okay, we know what this is. I send like my uncle who plays season long fantasy sports. He has a difficult time kind of sifting through everything. I think FanDuel did a great job kind of breaking down exactly what people are looking for. And not only that, explaining what the contests are. This may not be relevant to our users, but I did want to shoot a little love FanDuel's way and say I think you guys did a very nice job with the lobby. And hopefully we see more changes like this that are really with the casual player in mind. Because as much as we love being at Roto Grinders, we still represent a very small percentage of the people that are playing daily fantasy sports. And if we want the rest of those people to stick around, we need to make it as easy as possible for them to enter contests and to feel comfortable.
Yeah, one of those situations, kind of less is more. And if there's not as many options for you, not as many things you can actually do in the lobby, I think it's less intimidating for new users, kind of what you said there. And in terms of the live scoring page, I do like the addition to a money total. Basically, the same as the app. Now it shows you how much you've entered and what you're currently returning. So I thought that was a pretty cool addition.
Yeah, very cool. And the life hack that I was talking about was, you know how when you go from the desktop site and you want to enter a tournament multiple times, it'll actually pop up that little thing on your screen where you can either enter with a current lineup or you can enter a new lineup and then it takes you to a new screen?
Yep.
Well, I found out that it is slower now if you just click to enter, like if you have a lineup that exists and you click to enter it, it takes like a little animation to like maybe 2.5 seconds or so before you can click again. So this takes a little bit longer, but you can actually go rapid fire. I want you guys to listen to my mouse here real quick. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
If you go like that, it'll actually enter like 3 to 5 of them at a time.
Really? Okay, yeah, well, that's good to know, so you can just keep on going.
Yeah, I was sitting there today, and I was like, you know, this is. I was just getting bored and getting a little aggravated, so I was just clicking as hard as I could, and I was like, wait a second. This is actually working. So I entered like 100 entries into the $2 squeeze in like a matter of like 2 minutes, where it would have taken me quite a while longer.
Nice. I like that as well.
So that is your life hack for today. Now we move on to our lineup review, courtesy of Twitter handle Aaron R. Malley OD. And the OD, something to do with optometrist. He says like he's an optometrist. I'm not sure what the D stands for. Is that like an optometry of dentistry or optometry doctorate? I'm not sure.
Yeah, something most likely confusing and that I will not understand. So we'll just roll with OD.
Yeah, OD. OG. Aaron Malley, the original optometrist, maybe? I don't know. I'm gonna stop now. Let's just go ahead and talk about the lineup. What were your first impressions when you saw this?
Yeah, I mean, it had some of the more popular plays on the slate. Overall, I like the construction process here. I like that he went up and paid for Goldschmidt at first base. I think that may have been a little bit contrarian today just due to the price tag there, but I think that was a good play, and obviously it turned out well. He smacked a home run his first at bat. Only issue I do have here, I know Brian McCann has been better against lefties. I still think there's better options at the catcher position. Let me go through and actually run through this whole lineup. I forgot to do that. We have Heston at pitcher. Brian McCann was catching. Paul Goldschmidt at first base. Colton Wong at second base. Obviously, he hit the grand slam, and his price tag was phenomenal there. 2.9K on FanDuel. A-Rod was, I'd say, the top option at third base, and he rewarded us all with his seventh birthday dong. Bogart's kind of the chalk play at shortstop. Went with Nelson Cruz in the outfield against the lefty. I think that's a fine play. Don't think it panned out. I'm not sure the game is still going on. I don't think he's done much. Mookie Betts leading off in a phenomenal spot against John Danks. John Danks finally got blown up like we've all anticipated him to do all season long, and he's kind of surprised us on a few occasions with some really good outings. And Dexter Fowler, who I actually like quite a bit. It was a nice price tag, and I think it was a good spot for him. I know people prefer using him when he's facing a righty, but he's actually been better against lefties this season and a pretty decent sample size. And Jorge De La Rosa has allowed 10 stolen bases on the season, so I think that play was a good play, definitely. And like I said, the price tag on Fowler was only 2.7K. Like I said, the only spot I have a problem with here is McCann in the lefty-lefty matchup. Like I said, I know he's been better and pretty good against lefties this season, but I think you know, there's some better options at the position.
What was McCann's price tag, out of curiosity?
I think like 3.2, I believe. So it's kind of in between paying up for Posey or going down and saving with like a Matt Wieters, who obviously had a big game. He had the walk-off home run there.
Yeah. So here's kind of what my thoughts are on this lineup. And first things first, I got to say congratulations, Aaron R. Malley OD, for avoiding Hanley Ramirez and going with Mookie Betts instead. You son of a bitch.
Yeah,
it's just you're tilting me without even knowing it by making me sit there and see Mookie Betts and all of his 5.5 fantasy point glory, as I'm sitting here looking at my 1 million Hanley Ramirez shares and all the good they did me. So
was he a full negative 1.25?
Oh my, I don't know. It was. Yeah. I don't think he was quite that. I think he picked up like a run or an RBI or
did
something.
Did he at some point?
Like
okay.
A sack fly or something.
Gotcha.
I mean, at that point though, it's just insult to injury. Like, yeah. just take, dude, just give me negative 1.25.
Yeah. Okay. He did get one RBI. So he was negative 0.25. Yes.
So that's the first thing I noticed. The two plays I don't like, and I only want to focus on those because you did a great job talking about the rest of the lineup, and I like all the plays except for McCann and Fowler. And here's why. McCann, of course, you mentioned it, the lefties versus lefty matchup here, and away from Yankee Stadium, he just doesn't tend to be at his best. I can understand the contrarian aspect, but I would have much rather gone with somebody like Victor Martinez at a similar price point, or like you noted, Matt Wieters, you could go down to him or maybe even punt the position. But all in all, you know, that's one spot. I still think it's a pretty good lineup. Fowler, I don't hate. I don't hate nearly as much as I hate the Brian McCann play. But I do think there were some really enticing options in Josh Hamilton and Chris Young at a similar price point.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, 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 really want to get a piece of Matt Harrison with right-handed batters in that environment. And obviously McCann not cutting it. So you got A-Rod. I really wanted to get another piece. So, you know, whatever Chris Young ended up with, I actually didn't check any of the lineup scores yet. But I think I would have rather had Chris Young for slightly more. I don't know if he had the cash left over. Maybe he would have had to finagle something else. But I love the rest of the lineup.
Yeah, if this was right on and he only had $2,700 left, like I said, I think the Fowler play made sense. Yeah, I would have preferred a guy like Chris Young, I think, to him if he had the extra $100. If not, I think it was a fine filler to the lineup, I guess.
Did you see the news that just broke, by the way?
I did not.
Troy Tulowitzki traded to the Blue Jays.
You're joking.
No, apparently they're going to be good against left-handed pitching now.
Is that a real thing, or is that
no,
a joke?
This is real. Troy Tulowitzki was just... Troy Tulowitzki. I'm terrible at
pronouncing
his name.
Wow, I do see that, yeah.
Just traded to the Blue Jays. So it looks like he's gonna probably DH, right?
Has to, yeah. That's, Yeah, I mean, where else would he play unless...
That's got to be the thinking, right? Like, we put him in the American League, and now he doesn't have to play the field, and hopefully he's not made of porcelain?
They wouldn't put him at second base, would they?
I think you got to just... You have to DH him, right? Like, at this point in his career, you can't... Well, you just can't deal with the injuries, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it makes sense. Wow. Holy cow. Imagine facing that team facing a left-handed pitcher. Wow.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be brutal, but not as brutal as the pulsing guitars and driving melody, the thumping beats of my album of the day. Animals as Leaders. The album is called Joy of Motion. Now, this is actually a band that you wouldn't have heard on the radio simply because they're not really radio playable. They don't have any lyrics. They're a completely instrumental band. They play a really cool... I don't know exactly what they're classified as, but I classify it almost as like tempo-based rock music. In fact, a couple of the members used to be in some hardcore metal bands, but it's just really cool the way they synthesize all the melodies and bring them together, and there's a lot of harmony, there's a lot of bass, there's a lot of cool underlying beats, a lot of intricate things going on with each song. It's great thinking music, or, you know, lineup-making music. And it's a little bit of a stark contrast to another all-instrumental band I've recommended before, which is Explosions in the Sky. Explosions in the Sky kind of starts the song slow. They build up to this massive crescendo. And they're really sort of an overpowering sound at the end. And Animals as Leaders just comes out, like, smashing your face right away. If you guys like that kind of music, definitely check out the album Joy of Motion. And Hoop, is this something you think you would listen to if it was on the radio?
Hey, if it's on the radio, it's good to go for me, man. So if it makes its way to the radio, I will certainly tune in and listen.
I'm laughing at you, and I'm also laughing at a tweet I saw from John Heyman, who happens to be an MLB writer for CBSSports.com. He said it's Jays for Tulo, confirmed, and one of the more popular daily fantasy personality, well, I guess daily fantasy players, because he's at the top of a lot of leaderboards, K Cannon.
Yep.
Just tweeted the whole team? Question mark. Like, maybe, right? Like, Tulo has a lot of value, so.
Yeah, and you know, on a day like today, you really have to feel bad for fellow Grinders Live co-host CSU Ram.
Yeah, no more Tulo obsession for him.
Ah, it's gotta hurt. Sorry to hear that, buddy. If you're listening.
He listens, I guarantee it. This is must listen. This is must listen when you and I are on the pod together.
Yes.
Sure, make sure you leave me your favorite music. I love listening to what you you guys are listening to at the moment. And, of course, Hoop wants to hear as well. You can hit us up at CrazyGaby and at Hoop2410 on Twitter. Let's move into the slate breakdown. 15 games to get to. First one on the docket is one of the ones I have the most notes for. I was actually a little intimidated after the first two games because I have so many notes on these two games that I was thinking, if the whole slate's like this, I'm just going to pack it up and go home.
Yeah.
But thankfully, it got a lot simpler to dissect after this. James Shields taking on Noah Syndergaard, 6.5 run total, -143 for young Thor. What do you see when you first look at this, on the surface, pitcher duel?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the best way to put it. I mean, it's a pitcher's duel, and, you know, I think Syndergaard is the slightly better play here. He's actually a pretty large favorite in this game. I didn't expect him to be this big of a favorite. Opened up right around 140 with a total of 6.5, and that's with James Shields, you know, on the other side of the mound. Shields has been good this year. The strikeout rate has been up. He's given up some home runs, so kind of a peculiar situation there with Mr. Shields, but I think Syndergaard's going to get the slight edge. He has this the higher strikeout rate, I think, than Shields. The main thing here is both these offenses are absolutely terrible. The Padres are a complete disappointment at the plate against right-handed pitching and left-handed pitching. Likely going to be sellers at the trade deadline here, so some of these guys could eventually be gone. In the Mets, we know the story here. We've talked about it numerous times. They've been absolutely terrible all season long as well. So I think you can go ahead and deploy both pitchers and feel relatively safe.
So in true 30 for 30 style, here we go. What if I told you that your offense had been worse than the New York Mets in every way this season?
Whose offense?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The San Diego Padres. Dug in, it's not. I'm with you. I first saw this line, I was like, wow, like the Mets are getting a -143 favorite with a competent pitcher on the other side of the mound in a game with a 6.5 run total. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. This is the kind of game you're used to seeing as like a -117 for somebody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you there. I was really confused. But then I started digging into it. San Diego, 22nd overall versus righties and 25th overall the last 30 days with a 21.9% strikeout rate. And the Mets, 24th versus right-handed pitching. So right there with them. But the actual 20th overall offense the last 30 days. The Padres are actually just like probably slightly worse overall this season versus right-handed pitching. When you take into account, you know, recency being a little truer because you've got some of these guys back for the New York Mets, like Daniel Murphy. He's a big part of their offense versus righties.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. Padres, just a huge disappointment. And I think that, I think you're right. That is the reason why they're a pretty decent favorite here, -140 range. So for me, if you're playing on a site like FanDuel, I think definitely go with Syndergaard. And on DraftKings, if you need like an SP2, I think Shields is a guy you can go to.
Yeah, Thor is legit, 25.2% strikeout rate, backed up by an 11.2% swinging strike rate. And Shields is one of the biggest surprises to me this year, one of the guys I've had the most trouble evaluating from week to week.
Yeah.
He was a guy with a declining strikeout rate who was never really a fireballer to begin with, 26.9% K rate now, backed up by just a massive 13.4% swinging strike rate. But he also has lost his control a little bit, 8.8% base on ball rate. And this is a guy that just is going after hitters in a way he hasn't gone after them before, giving up a 33.1% hard contact rate as well, and allowing 1.42 home runs per nine innings. Home runs have kind of been a problem for Shields in the past, and it's really being put on blast this season by his other struggles, which all culminate in a 389 wOBA to left-handed batters. That is my long-winded way of saying I like both pitchers in this game. Syndergaard for cash and tournaments, Shields for only tournaments, and maybe SP2, but maybe not even that because of the struggles. But I have no trouble picking any left-handed batters for the Mets that I think are in a good spot against James Shields, even in cash games.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you. Just to give a quick update to the breaking news we had here on the podcast, the Troy Tulowitzki trade. Actually, that appears to be Troy Tulowitzki for Jose Reyes and some minor league players.
What?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. Jeepers. Okay.
So, yeah, back to the analysis here. I agree with you. Two bad offenses, these pitchers.
Curtis Granderson, 7-for-61 versus Shields in his career, so you would think that's a left-handed batter you might not have to worry about. But remember, Shields' struggles are very new against lefties, so I think that sort of tilts the scale in Granderson's favor if I had to to pick one of them there.
Yeah, what Shields is doing this year is not what he's done throughout his career. So even though we see a big sample size there with the 61 at-bats and Granderson's only gotten 7 hits off him, I think, you can kind of ignore that because, Shields just been a little bit different.
Washington at Miami, 6.5 run total, -125 favorite for young Jose Fernandez taking on Jordan Zimmermann. Is this one as cut and dry as it seems? No batters, take Jose Fernandez?
Yep. It's basically the notes I have here. I mean, the guy's been absolutely dominant at home. He's looked very sharp since returning, coming off a 7-inning, 11-strikeout performance in Arizona last week. And he's facing offense that is not at full health in the Washington Nationals. So it all adds up for him, and it's pointing towards him being a phenomenal play. And I think he's probably the top option on the slate.
Yeah, absolutely. When you consider the fact that Washington is the 27th overall offense the last 30 days with, wait for it, Hoop, a 25.1% strikeout rate. That's just phenomenally bad. Not even Bryce Harper can cover up the sins of this lineup without Anthony Rendon, Jason Worth, Denard Span. I think Fernandez, who... I mean, I'm not going to quote his strikeout rates and such because it's a small sample size, but let's just say he is back. He is back, and he is possibly better than ever. I don't want to say that yet, but the only thing that could be holding him back from a win on a one-pitcher site like FanDuel is the fact that the Marlins are 30th versus right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
18th overall offense the last 30 days, and if I can get into Jordan Zimmermann here for a minute, another guy, and this is what took me so long, Hoop, is Shields and Zimmermann are two pitchers that are just – really sort of testing the limits of what you would expect from a player from year to year, because Zimmermann is a guy who's always carried an above-average strikeout rate. This year, just a 17.7% K rate backed by a 7.5% swinging strike rate. That doesn't even give optimism for the K rate to get to league average, let alone the above-league average that he used to sit at. He's also allowing a 30.5% hard contact rate, which is right about league average, which is not somewhere you'd expect an elite pitcher to be. He's struggling with control a little bit, and he's really bad against lefties this year, which is new. 323 WOBA. It's on a 355 BABIP, which means it's probably a little bit of bad luck, but still, this guy's profile just does not grade out to me as somebody that I would want to mess with on a 15-game slate with other great pitching options, even against the lowly Marlins.
I mean, I agree with everything you just said there, but I can tell you one thing, just one thing, that is working in his favor tonight.
Uh-oh.
He's facing the Marlins, and the Marlins lineup is ugly.
I thought you were going to tell me something I didn't know. That was pretty – the build-up to that, the drama. Yeah. I was on the edge of my seat, bro.
Yeah, I had to build it up a little bit there. He's facing the Marlins, and have you seen what their lineup looks like lately?
Yes, trust me. I've seen look, if this was a 10-game slate, I would love me some Jordan Zimmermann. I can't do it.
And I'm not saying play Jordan Zimmermann. I just want to bring up the point of how poor of a lineup that they're coming out with. It's literally of a AAA level team. I mean, really, is Ichiro still leading off for them when they're facing righties?
Yes.
Isn't he like 50, 60? I mean, the dude's old.
He has no power whatsoever. None. Zero power. So, and he's not fast enough to beat out infield singles anymore.
Yes, so not endorsing Jordan Zimmermann, just definitely not endorsing that Marlins lineup that just looks terrible at this point in the season.
Colorado Rockies at Chicago Cubs. We have no total for this game so far because I think there was an overnight pitching change, as they like to say. Johan Fland taking on Dallas Buehler. Buehler, a -158 favorite. It's kind of weird to see these guys, one of them being a favorite.
Yeah.
And then to have that portion of the odds already done, but not to have the total for the game. So I would assume this is going to be like 8, 8.5. What would you think?
Yeah, I'm guessing. I'm guessing 8. That'll be my guess. But I'm definitely going to be employing the Hoop logic here and assuming this Buehler guy sucks.
There you go, Dallas Buehler. Yes, it's. By the way, what kind of name is Buehler?
Yeah, that name too. Like Dallas Buehler. That's a very interesting MLB name there, and one that I'm, like I said, I'm assuming he's not very good.
I guess one thing that I always think of as a parent, and maybe this is just completely flawed logic, but I try to think of like names that don't sound corny, like two syllable with L's in the middle. Dallas Bueller. I don't know. Like I would think like if I was my kid, Bueller was his name. I would like I don't know like Jonathan just, Bueller or like you know I don't know.
Just any reason for people to not make fun of your kid is what you're looking for when your last name is Bueller. And yeah, like you said, Dallas Bueller. Yeah, they can get a little rhyme going and add on some other inconsiderate words just to make it worse. So yeah, I'm with you there. It's just not a good name combination. In terms of pitching skill set, you got anything on this guy?
No, not a whole lot. This is a spot start, and you can definitely pick on both of these teams. To kind of rattle off a couple of numbers here, Chicago Cubs were actually top five against lefties for a little bit. They've been falling backwards in a big way. The 30th overall offense the last 30 days with a 23% K rate. Another team that's been swinging freely and missing. Colorado, of course, terrible away from Coors Field. And the one note I have on Johan Flandt is that back in 2014, albeit in a small sample size, he allowed a 346 wOBA to right-handed batters, and I think that's where you want to find the value in this one. Chris Bryant, who's obviously hot with the walk-off home run tonight, Chris DeNorfia might get in there, and any other righties that find their way close to the top of the line. Your boy Dexter Fowler from the lineup review earlier, he's definitely in play here too.
Yeah, I have no issue targeting the righties. I mean, that's where you're going to want to get your exposure. A lot of these guys have nice prices, too. Like we talked about, Fowler is under 3K. Chris Bryant, I believe, is 3K. And
it's a steal.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, definitely get some of these Cubs righties in your lineup. They're phenomenal plays.
Cincinnati Reds against the St. Louis Cardinals. 7-run total, and surprisingly, one of the largest favorites on the night.
Yeah.
Jamie Garcia against everybody's favorite trade target for some reason, Mike Leake. I mean, this guy's name is coming up as being one of the most highly coveted pitchers as we approach the trade deadline, and I don't quite understand why. Unless there's something with contracts that I don't really understand, and I'll be the first one to admit, I understand a lot about NBA contracts. I understand nothing. I mean nothing about MLB contracts or the way it works, because the salary cap to me like it's a very compelling factor in the NBA, you know, whether or not this team can add that player or this player. In baseball, it's just a bunch of rich tycoons who can do whatever they want as long as they're willing to spend the money. And that's not very interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you don't see things like in the NBA where people are trading just to acquire a contract so it comes off the books at the end of the year and then they have more money to spend. I mean, that stuff's intriguing. This stuff where you can pay these guys whatever the hell you want and not many repercussions, that's not fun. But yeah, Mike Leake, I mean, teams actually want this guy on their team. That doesn't seem to make much sense.
Yeah, I don't get it either, dude. I keep... It's like a double take every time I read that from a beat writer on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, the Reds have to be loving this, I'm assuming. But for DFS purposes, yeah, Garcia is a big favorite here. -170. Total of 7. Garcia was pitching well before the injury. Just kind of one of those get the job done type pitchers. Kind of reminds me of maybe a Brett Anderson. Really limits the damage. You know, I looked at his price. I think if the price was a little bit lower, could make the justification to maybe go ahead and roster this guy. Hope he goes 6-7 innings, picks up the win. You really can't count on a lot of strikeouts. So interesting, but I just with the lower strikeout rate, it's kind of hard to invest too much into him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. One quick note on Mike Leake, and maybe this is just my ignorance showing it probably is, but if he's that highly coveted and like he's sitting right now basically as like a fringe starter at the moment, I mean, let's just be honest, he's sitting close to a 4 ERA. Well, I guess that's technically not a fringe starter because that's like a league average ERA, but he's like a middle of the rotation guy at best.
Yeah.
Are you getting him pitched so he can get rocked and that ERA can shoot up? I'm just taking him off the...
If teams really want him, yeah, I would not put him out there, I'll tell you that much.
No, because this is a guy that's liable to get blown up by left-handed bats at any given moment. I mean, there's a realistic possibility his 3.78 ERA by the time we're done tomorrow could be over 4 again.
Absolutely.
And in a couple of starts, it could easily be up around 4.5. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. I guess you kind of have to because you don't want teams to be worried about injury, but I would just find something like, hey, by the way, do you have like a third cousin that might have passed away recently? You need a couple days, like some bereavement. Maybe that's morbid. I'm just saying, like, just do what you can do to make it. I don't know. This is too much scheming. Or maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need schemers in front offices. I don't know. It's just
something. I mean, but I'm pretty shocked that he's one of the prime targets approaching the trade deadline. And I like these Cardinals lefties tonight. I like a lot of them, and they have nice prices on the sponsor site, FanDuel. And Colton Wong has a nice price. Matt Carpenter has a nice price. Jason Hayward's now hitting cleanup. He's right around 3.4, 3.5K. I like these lefties quite a bit, and actually one of my favorite teams. I mean, I'm just not a huge fan of Mike Leake, and I like these Reds bat or these Cardinals bats quite a bit.
And true to what you and I talk about, somebody actually just tweeted at me, Colabella with like 19 exclamation points. He's not even playing right now, and they just...
This is the worst. Can't escape it.
You can't escape it. So back to this game, and I apologize for the digression off the beaten path. But the St. Louis Cardinals, 10th overall offense versus right-handed pitching, but 22nd overall the last 30 days. I think they start trending back towards that season-long number with Matt Holliday back, though. What do you think?
Yeah, I like this. I like this offense quite a bit, and they perform better when they're at home. And their guys have nice price tags. Like I said, Wong, Carpenter. Even Holiday and Hayward, I mean, likely the 1 through 4 hitters, and they're all, on average, I'd say right around 3K when you bundle all their prices together and divide it by four. And I think it's a fine stack, and I like them for cash games and tournaments as well.
Yeah, Mike Leake allowing a 325 wOBA to left-handed batters. That's been a staple of his problems his entire career. So the three lefties you mentioned are perfect for this matchup. And then Matt Holliday is actually 15 for 39 as a righty against Leake over his career. That's about the range of sample size. That's about the range of sample size that I will give into BVP a little bit and say maybe Matt Holliday just sees Mike Leake very well. So, you know, I'll give in a little bit there. Jamie Garcia around a 3 ERA true talent. I'm okay with him. He's definitely not as good as his ERA would suggest, though. The peripherals, particularly the left on base percentage, making a little bit of noise.
Yeah. And, you know, the matchup's actually pretty solid for him.
Yeah.
You look at the Reds lineup, and obviously you can count on him somewhat neutralizing a guy like Joey Votto and Jay Bruce in those lefty-lefty matchups as well.
Twitter is on fire with the Troy Tulowitzki news. Everybody's given their take. It's just it's a sea of hot takes right now, Hoop.
Oh, yeah.
Milwaukee at San Francisco, 7-run total here, -145 favorite for Matt Cain as he takes on Wiley E. Peralta. Yes, I know that's not his name. No, I don't care. I'm going to keep calling him that. Wiley E. Peralta.
Hey, it works for me, and I'll tell you one thing. He's not a very good pitcher. He's facing off with the Giants team here that has been good against right-handed pitching throughout the season and has turned into one of the better offenses overall. So I am on board with getting some exposure to some Giants bats. Angel Pagan, really, really cheap on our sponsor site. He was hovering around the minimum last week. I'm assuming he's still in that range. Joe Panic, Mr. Duffy, Posey, Pence, Brandon Crawford. He had a home run tonight, I believe. So I like these Giants bats quite a bit.
Yeah, Giants actually have taken over first place versus right-handed pitching from the Dodgers.
Yeah.
After the Giants jumped down to what seemed like an almost insurmountable lead to start the season, they've actually been floundering for quite some time. They're a middling offense over the past couple of months.
Yeah.
San Francisco also the fourth overall offense the last 30 days, and I'm with you. Wiley Peralta, 1.33 home runs per nine innings this year, and this is not an issue that is new to this season. He's always given up the long ball, and he's been terrible against both sides of the plate this season, and really this guy's career has been predicated upon being able to basically destroy right-handed batters. He has a slider that's very good when it's on, but he's lost control of it at times in his career. What happens when he loses control, of course, is he just becomes bad against righties as well against lefties. So this year, I think it's safe to assume, without looking too deep into the profile, that the slider probably isn't working for him yet. And that makes me think the San Francisco Giants not going to have too much trouble getting to him. On the other side here, Milwaukee trending in the right direction fast, third overall offense the last 30 days. And Matt Cain, who has been a pitch-to-contact wizard over his career. I know people talk about that being my new little catchphrase. I like it. Pitch-to-contact wizard. It
like
sounds,
it.
yeah, it sounds kind of cool. The wheels fell off in 2014 for him, and it looks like he's continuing to decline. And I think it's just an age-related decline, to be honest.
Yeah, and just, you know, not a guy you can roster with any sort of confidence, doesn't have the strikeout upside any longer. Seems like even as of last year, he was kind of like a prime target in certain matchups, but this season, even in the best of matchups, he's kind of a guy to avoid. Brewers could be without a couple key pieces, though. Yeah. I know Lynn continues to be sidelined, and Ryan Braun was scratched from the lineup tonight. Could be an easier matchup for Kane, but certainly not one I want to get exposure to. And with Lynn and Braun out, it kind of just waters down the entire Brewers lineup. So, you know, it kind of has me losing interest in some of the other players that are a part of that lineup that I would like to target, like Parra or Carlos Gomez. So overall, I think I'm not necessarily targeting the Brewers, but I'm certainly not targeting Matt Kane either.
Yeah, and Parra and Lind could both be out of town by the time the game starts, is the scary.
Exactly.
You know, this is going to be a 10:15 Eastern start time, so 3 hours are going to elapse before the game starts after lineups lock.
Yeah.
So on DK, it's probably fine as long as you're keeping, you know, constant vigilant watch. But on a site like FanDuel, our sponsor, you definitely cannot roll the dice there.
No, yeah, I agree with you there.
So. All right, let's move it on along to the Kansas City Royals taking on the Cleveland Indians. 7.5 run total at Progressive Field with Trevor Bauer sitting as a -115 favorite over Chris Young. Did the Indians finally get back on track today, Hoop? Tomorrow, today?
Yeah, I don't know. They've been one of the worst offenses in all of baseball as of late. It's been painful to see because I mean, they have some very nice pieces. I can't pull the trigger. Maybe in tournaments, but with obviously Chris Young, not a good pitcher. He has the high fly ball lean, and he's avoided the damage for the most part this season. But he does have that solid bullpen backing him up. This offense has been bad, so for me, it's likely I will get exposure via tournaments, and that is just about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well. As much as I want to target Chris Young. Dude, you have no idea how much I want to target Chris Young. Here's the big thing about him is that for most of his career, he has been out-pitching his home run to fly ball rate by a healthy amount. He's one of those anomaly guys. He's 6'10". The approach is just really what has kind of saved him. He induces a lot of weaker fly balls that fall about 10 to 15 feet short of the fence. But this year, he actually owns a 1.33 home runs per nine innings off of a massive 57.2% fly ball rate, and his home run to fly ball ratio is at 8.6%. Now, league average is right around 9.5%, so he's still pitching below league average in terms of home runs to fly balls, and he's allowing 1.33 home runs per nine innings. I think this is the year it's finally starting to catch up for him. There's actually a pretty short porch in right field, and are you ready for this? This is going to scare you.
All right.
Brandon Moss is 5-for-17 against Chris Young career, but with 4 home runs.
Wow. Yeah, it makes sense. It is shocking, though. The thing with Moss, he's getting that crappy lineup spot, basically, even against righties. They have him down there hitting 7th, so has a GPP appeal written all over it.
Absolutely, and as far as cash games are concerned, Michael Brantley.
Yeah, is his price still down? I haven't looked him up lately.
Yeah, let me see. He's at 3,600 today.
Yeah, it's come up a little bit, I like it.
I like Brantley. On the other side with Trevor Bauer, Kansas City 7th versus right-handed pitching, 11th overall the last 30 days, and Bauer owns that nice 23.9% strikeout rate with a 10.9% swinging strike rate.
Yeah.
But what's been killing him is a 9.7% base on ball rate and a 1.33 home runs per nine innings. Strangely enough, the same as Chris Young this year. They're just killing him, though, because for all the good he's doing with strikeouts, he's just getting guys on base and then giving up the long ball.
Yeah, and we've seen it all season long. You know, Royals continue, and they've fallen off a little bit, but overall they're a team that makes these pitchers work quite a bit. So I will not be on Bauer, and just not really going to be on many Royals bets either. I mean, I guess you can make a case for a guy like Eric Hosmer. You know, I don't mind Escobar leading off playing shortstop. He always has a cheap price tag, kind of my go-to shortstop punt/value option. So I don't mind going that route. But overall, it's kind of a more avoid game for me than anything else.
Detroit at Tampa Bay. David Price taking on Jake Odorizzi. Here's the game we were expecting between Shields and Syndergaard. Basically a pick-em between two stud pitchers with a 6.5 run total. Either of these guys interest you, or do you think they kind of cancel one another out?
Slight interest. I know that Tampa Bay has been good against left-handed pitching. Yeah. I don't think that necessarily scares me off David Price. I'll put him probably second to Jose Fernandez on the slate. Hmm. Price has been pitching well. I hope to God the Tigers trade him. The Tigers are not a good team. They should be selling at this trade deadline, not buying. We can talk more about that later if anyone would like to. Their bullpen is just so terrible. It's just a frustrating situation. As a little fan rant, now we can move on. Odorizzi, you know, it's a good pitching environment there in Tampa Bay. So tough. I'd say more so as a SP2. I think he's a fine option. Tigers offense has been one of the better overall offenses this season, and it is important to note that they are going to be without Miguel Cabrera for at least a few more weeks, so it's definitely a big knock on their lineup overall.
By the way, what the hell is going on with Miguel Cabrera being out, and all of a sudden they surged to second overall the last 30 days?
It was like that series with the Mariners when they just, each team scored like 14 runs a night.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy, dude. Now they're third overall versus right-handed pitching, which is, you know, pretty much par for the course. They've been there all year. What is interesting, and you noted it, Tampa third overall versus left-handed pitching this year, you know, sneakily, because they've not been an offensive, you know, team full of offensive fireworks this year. No. And in fact, over the last 30 days, Hoop, they're the 29th overall offense, better than only the Cubs, but they also carry a 23.7% strikeout rate. So, I mean, I think you're very justified in your David Price love, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of people are going to go to, you know, RotoGrinders, check out the WOBA tool. And what's that called again? The tool that has the WOBA versus handedness. I'm drawing a blank here.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the official name of it's called. But
you should probably know this. I really apologize to any of the RotoGrinders brass listening right now. I should know that off the top of my head. Yeah, WOBA machine something. Yeah. But yes, there's a very awesome tool that shows you this. But I do think that comes with a little bit of noise. People are going to see how bad or how good the Rays have been against lefties. But it doesn't think that doesn't take into account how bad they've just been the last 30 days.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the difference between Jose Fernandez and David Price is a lot closer than what you'll see when the percentages come out in these bigger tournaments. I think most people are going to flock to Jose Fernandez by a large margin. And I just don't think the expected production is that big of a difference between the two guys.
Alex Cobb taught Odorizzi how to Dougie. No, just not Dougie. He taught him how to throw a split change. And that has actually made Odorizzi a pitcher with a little bit of a reverse split. Now, it may not look like it at first glance this year because he's only allowing a 284 WOBA to right-handed batters. But that's on a 184 BABIP. If you adjust that 184 BABIP by 115 points or so to put him around league average, can you imagine what that WOBA versus righties would actually swell up to? I think there's a blow-up Odorizzi outing versus right-handed batters coming very soon, and that is not a sentence that you want to be saying in the same breath as he's also facing the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, if you really believe that and you believe he's due to get smacked around by a team of right-handed batters, and this is certainly the situation. The Tigers load up. I mean, all their best hitters right-handed. They'll have a lot of right-handed bats in this lineup, so it certainly could be the case.
All right, let's move forward and talk about the Chicago White Sox versus the Boston Red Sox. Lots of Sox. Yeah. In this matchup. I hope nobody gets lost in the dryer. That's all I'm saying. 8.5 run total, -127 for Wade Miley. And is this the only time this season where I'm actually going to use Wade Miley?
I sure hope so. And it's facing the White Sox. I mean, come on, they have a guy named Melky Cabrera hitting in the middle of their lineup.
Melky!
I mean, the White Sox have been bad. They've been worse against left-handed pitching. You know, this is certainly not the production that the White Sox brass thought they were going to get when they put this lineup together, but it has been bad. And, man, Wade Miley, what do you think in tournaments there?
It's so tough for me to endorse Wade Miley, and I'm even I'm vomiting in my mouth a little bit as I tell you guys that he's probably a pretty good bet in tournaments. Now, I'm going to give you the warts first. He owns a 9% base on ball rate, and he's allowing a 338 wOBA to right-handed batters. So, you know, hello, Melky Cabrera. Hello, yeah. Jose Abreu. You know, like, you guys are going to get your shot at, you know, smashing Wade Miley. And frankly, you know, he's not even that big of a favorite here. But you look at the overall numbers, Chicago White Sox, I mean, beyond pathetic, a 58 WRC plus versus left-handed pitching. That means they are 42% below league average versus left-handed pitchers. And they're still the 19th overall offense the last 30 days, but I'm going to lean on the larger sample size, which is the whole year versus lefties. And so I'm gonna have a few shares of Wade Miley in tournaments. I'll say that. I'm not going to be happy about it. On the other side, Boston is 24th overall the last 30 days. They're really struggling right now. Obviously, they did well tonight, but the players I selected couldn't do well. Henry Ramirez, 8-for-19 career versus Jeff Samardzija. And the Shark has actually looked kind of like a league-average starting pitcher this season, and I confirmed it by checking into his numbers. He's essentially pitching as a league-average pitcher with upside, is kind of what I call him, allowing a 324 wOBA to lefties.
Yeah, and for me, when you look at this game, I want to pick my spots here. I don't want to get too much exposure to either offense.
Yeah.
Certainly you don't want too much exposure to the White Sox offense because they suck. And, you know, Jeff Samardzija, like you said, league average guy, he does have the ability to go out and be dominant.
Yeah,
we've seen it. You know, he really does. And we've seen it on quite a few occasions this season. So for me, the one name that kind of sticks out is David Ortiz. I mean, continues to have a fair price tag and continues to get the job done at the plate. So for me, it's David Ortiz, it's Jose Abreu. And, you know, if you're going any other route, likely just a pure punt play, looking for a cheap, cheap guy.
Those were the only two players I had in mind. Yeah. You read my noggin, Hoop. You read my noggin. New York Yankees taking on the Texas Rangers. 9.5 run total. Another pick-em, but this time it's not two aces. It's Martin Perez and Chris Capuano. This is basically going to be a battle to see who can suck less.
Yeah.
Which offense do you think makes the other guy suck more?
I am going to say the Rangers. Chris Capuano is an incredibly terrible pitcher, and it's just shocking that he's still part of Major League Baseball. The guy is really, really bad, and this ballpark is certainly not going to help him out. Temperatures are rising there. The runs are rising. So for me, love both offenses. Slight side with the Rangers, though.
Yeah, I like both offenses a lot here, of course. Texas, 25th versus left-handed pitching this year, but they're the 9th overall offense the last 30 days, so they do come into this game hot. Prince Fielder can hit lefties and righties alike, so that's a plus. Adrian Beltre finally looking a little bit healthier than he did earlier in the season, which is a huge reason they've struggled against left-handed pitching.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at his game logs right now. He's actually getting a few hits here and there, whereas early in the year he just could not even make contact. So.
And the thing with both these offenses, they're built to succeed more so against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching. A lot of the regulars on both sides are left-handed. You look at the Yankees lineup, Gardner, Ellsbury at the top, Brian McCann. So, you know, it's hard to kind of go all in with teams like this. And the same can be said about the Rangers. You look at the top of their order, you know, you have Prince Fielder in there. They've been batting Odor second against righties and lefties, Chu, Moreland. So both teams are built to succeed more so against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching. But, you know, this game is a very high total, two really bad pitchers on the mound. So I think you're going to want some exposure here for sure.
Yeah, FIP and XFIP both agree that Perez is a 4 ERA true talent, not the crazy number he's throwing at now. It's mainly due to his strand rate. That's 83%. That's going to come down. And then Chris Capuano, just to kind of put a nail in his coffin, he struggled with home runs for most of his career. That's not what you want to do if you're a bad pitcher, and he's giving it up to everyone this season. People might look at last year and see the weird reverse splits against lefties. It's kind of a fluke, though, considering what he's done in previous years. So don't let that be the reason it kind of, you know, keeps you from the righties like Alex Rodriguez and Mark Teixeira here. I definitely think they're the ones you want to target.
Yeah, and certainly.
Is the wrong team. The righties like Adrian Beltre and Robinson Chirinos are the
and
two
certainly,
that I'm targeting.
Yeah, and let that be the reason that you don't shy away from a guy like Prince Fielder.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's kind of works both ways there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I'll be interested to see if they start moving Robbins and Chirinos into a higher lineup spot. I'd love to see his power in the 5-hole or even the 6th hole. They usually bury him like 7th, 8th, or 9th.
Yeah, it's just a frustrating team with lineup construction. It just usually does not add up, does not make sense. Yeah, he's a guy that should be toward higher up in the order, at least 5th. Yeah, like you said, I mean, they're not a team that's loaded with right-handed bats. When they're facing a lefty, that guy should be bumped up a little bit for sure.
And before we move along, just to clarify, I realized Chris Capuano was not throwing the ball to Alex Rodriguez or Mark Teixeira. It's the other way around.
That's not how this baseball game works.
That's not how it works. Target them still, but because they're against Martin Perez, not because they're against Chris Capuano.
That would be kind of interesting for like one day for pitchers to pitch against their own team.
I'm all for chaos. I would be totally down with this idea. Who would be the best in the league? Think about it for a second. The Rockies should just tee off, right? If they're in Coors especially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that staff definitely is just due to get rocked every time they're on the field, let alone Coors. So, Los Angeles Angels taking on the Houston Astros, 8-run total, -119 for Colin McHugh. Does this surprise you? Only an 8-run total with these two offenses out in the desert?
Not really. These two pitchers do warrant a little bit of respect. I mean, they're above. I'd say they're both slightly above average pitchers. Yeah. Is that fair?
I think that's very fair.
Yeah. And for that reason, on a full slate, I'm not really targeting either guy. But it does not necessarily mean that I'm shying away from either offense either. I don't know. So I think this is a good spot for maybe some lineup fillers, a couple guys, or to go all in GPPs, because I don't think they're going to be many popular hitters from this game. You can look to a guy like Mike Trout. I think he'll have a pretty low ownership level. So for me, in your cash games, use this as maybe getting some lineup fillers in tournaments. I think these guys are all going to be pretty low owned, and both offenses have the ability to actually go off and hit a bunch of home runs. So I think it makes sense both ways there.
Angels, my number one stack of the night. After starting the year bottom three versus right-handed pitching for quite some time, they have surged to 8th overall versus righties, and they are the first overall offense the last 30 days. No one in baseball has been better than the last 30 days. And here's what Colin McHugh does. Colin McHugh, a very interesting pitcher. He had a lot of strikeouts last year, high K rate. It's down this year, so we don't have that in his favor. And he's also allowing huge reverse splits. According to Eno Saris, one of my favorite baseball minds to follow, McHugh has, I believe, the second best curveball in baseball. I believe it's Eno Saris that talked about that before the season, according to his rating scale. And that makes him essentially death to lefties. He's very good against opposite-handed hitters. But that 354 wOBA he's allowing to righties is no fluke. It's definitely going to continue. And listen, if you're going to play the Los Angeles Angels, the two guys you want are Trout and Pujols. I think that the huge ballpark shift for them makes them the two guys I really want in my lineups.
Yeah, I really think it's going to be a lower-owned team to target, to be honest with you. I think people still look at McHugh as an above-average pitcher. Has not been the case this season. Like you said, there's some reverse splits there. So I think it adds up to this Angels team, who will roll out quite a bit of righties. Their best hitters are right-handed, obviously, in Trout and Pujols. So, I think it does make sense to load up on these guys in tournaments.
Houston is the 7th overall offense the last 30 days, and C.J. Wilson allowing a 32% hard contact rate. The one interesting thing in his profile, and this kind of has me perplexed. I'm maybe going to pose a question about this in the forums. He seems to have shored up his big-time problems against right-handed batters that he had last year and in previous seasons, but he's now allowing a 323 wOBA to left-handed batters. That doesn't seem particularly luck-induced. It doesn't seem like he's, you know, getting unlucky with a batting average and balls in play that's very high. It's mainly a lot of home runs he's given up versus lefties, so I'm very interesting to see why that is. I'm still very hesitant. Like, I'm not going to go play Louis Valbuena or, Kobe Rasmus against him. Yeah. But I'm certainly interested as to why he's not giving it up to righties anymore. Last note, Chris Carter is 9-for-27 against him with 2 home runs and 2 doubles. If that were to sway anybody's decision, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting information there, my friend.
By the way, 9-for-27 maybe not going to be the greatest like BVP thing ever, because 333 could just be a good right-handed batter against the left. Except for Chris Carter, batting 333 means he definitely sees something that he likes.
That's exactly the point I was just about to make. 9-for-27 for Chris Carter is like 20 for 27 for a guy like Mike Trout.
Absolutely. Absolutely, my friend. That's the only reason I found that noteworthy. Like, anytime Chris Carter's actually putting a bat on the ball that often, I'm interested.
Yeah, he's above the Mendoza line. Something's working out right for him.
Absolutely. Philadelphia at Toronto. As we LOL about Troy Tulowitzki, let's LOL about Adam Morgan. 9-run total here, and Felix DuBrunt, he's got to be feeling some swag right now. If you're Felix DuBrunt and you're checking out, you know, the odds page, the Vegas odds page at rotogrinders.com, you see yourself as a -230 favorite, you're feeling pretty good about yourself right now, right?
He'll be rolling into that Rogers Center, walking nice, have a little sway going, pumping the chest a little bit. Yeah. This will be the last time ever in his career that he will be this large of a favorite.
I think the first time he's ever been this
first
large
time
of a favorite.
And the last time. Can we play him?
Oh, dude, that's the question. I spent like a full 10 minutes of research on like trying to figure out if I could actually play Felix DeBrunt. I walked away from my desk, proverbially, of course. I actually stayed at my desk and continued on to the next game. But I walked away from this matchup saying no. I don't think I could play him. Here's why. First of all, -230 is still a huge number, but 9-run total means that they're expecting the Phillies to score some runs. Like, if this was supposed to be a Felix DuBrunt shutdown game, it would be like a 7.5-run total and him being a -230 favorite.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The hitting environment, obviously, very plus. One of the better hitting environments in all of baseball. I'm just curious to see. It's rare to see a number this big, especially when it's a guy like DuBrunt. 100-person, 50-50. How many people play this guy as their starting pitcher on FanDuel?
Oh my gosh. Like, I actually hope they do. I think he's good for 6-7 fantasy points tonight. Yeah. And I think 4 of those are the win. I'm not kidding. Like, that's literally what I predict him for. I'm giving him the 4 points, and I still think he's going to give up 4 or 5 earned runs, and I think he's going to probably go maybe 4 to 6 innings. Toronto, first versus left-handed pitching, which we obviously know. Adam Morgan allowing a 388 wOBA to right-handed batters in a small sample size. This could get ugly quickly, and I think is really the only reason that DeBrunt is such a huge favorite, because the Philadelphia Phillies are the 14th overall team versus lefties this year, so that's overall for the whole season, and they're the 6th overall offense the last 30 days. I continue to have to put my foot in my mouth talking bad about the Phillies because they're just dominating.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is the worst possible matchup for Adam Morgan. I mean, it could not be any worse for him heading to an American League park, Rogers Center, facing the Blue Jays, a lineup absolutely built to mash left-handed pitching. He better hope Troy Tulowitzki does not get in town in time, because that would just make it even worse. I mean, so much going against him. I mean, these Toronto Blue Jays bats, these guys all top to bottom in play, and that includes Chris Colabello.
Podcast over. I'm just going to stand up and walk out of the podcast.
Done. All right. Has he still been hitting 5th?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he has. And it's probably going to be even better. Who's going to bat leadoff for the Jays now? Is it going to be Tulo?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what they do there. That'll be very interesting.
You can't waste that power first, right?
But you definitely want him hitting towards the top of the order. So I don't know. I mean, somebody. I mean, they've hit Donaldson as high as 2nd. I mean, would they do that? I don't know. I'll be very interested to see what they do there.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen. But if 2-0 goes to leadoff, like, what if – I'm just saying, like, I think there's a possibility that Colabello could bat even higher. I don't think he should, but he might, right?
Just to haunt you, my friend.
Oh, it would be the absolute worst in the world. So, any other plays in this one to tidy it up? Are you pretty much just all the chalk?
Yeah,
guys?
Just to add on to what you said about the Phillies, their offense has been pretty adequate this season against left-handed pitching, and a lot of it, actually, I'd say all of it, has to do with Franco.
Yeah, he's just one guy can change an offense, and Mikel Franco has changed the complexion of that offense against lefty. He's just a monster, and you have to be careful and cautious. Changes the way pitchers approach, absolutely.
Yep.
Atlanta at Baltimore, 7.5 run total, -165 favorite for Yabato Jimenez, taking on Julio Teheran. Jimenez is a guy I like, Coop. Tell me what you're thinking.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm actually with you, unfortunately. Big favorite here.
Unfortunately.
Going against this Braves team, they got Freeman back, I'm pretty sure, but still, their overall lineup is very subpar. Nice favorite. He has some upside. I mean, he really does. We've seen him have some big games. We've seen him have some strikeout games. This lineup, like I said, just does not pack a big punch. So I'm all right. I'm all right with him as a SP2 if he's really cheap somewhere, and certainly in tournaments as well.
Yeah. Listen, Atlanta, 23rd versus right-handed pitching, 26th overall the last 30 days. Baltimore started off the season hot versus righties, but they've dropped down to 11th. And they're 21st overall offensively the last 30 days with a 23.3% strikeout rate. They're just not an offense right now that I'm particularly afraid of. So, I mean, I guess, yeah, Julio Teheran, like, I guess he's in play, right? Maybe.
I mean, obviously, it's a bad ballpark here. Some of the lefties here for the Orioles can do some damage, obviously. In Chris Davis, you look at our boy Paredes. You know, he's been better at home opposed on the road, if you're into that type of thing.
No, Teheran. I'm saying it right now. No, Teheran.
Yeah. Here, you ready for the hoop stat of the podcast?
Do it. Let's go.
Yeah, listening to the game today, or watching the game, I believe, the Orioles game, they're hitting 196 in the last seven games.
Wow.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Wow. Terrible.
Hoop analysis, my friends. There you go.
I like it. Hoop analysis. Yeah. It's basically like a solar eclipse. It happens once per podcast. Cyclical rotation.
And there it is.
Now that it's occurred, now that it's occurred, we did not look directly at it. By the way, we cut a small slit in a piece of cardboard before we stared at it. And to tidy up this game, Yubaldo Jimenez continues to support his 22% K rate with a less than average swinging strike rate, which has been a big anomaly for me all season. I don't want to say mind boggling. It's been like mind smashing, as in like me hitting my head against my desk trying to figure out what the hell is going on. But he seems to do it. And to kind of piggyback on you and your hesitance to play Julio Teheran, I'm with you. 8% base on ball rate, that's not good. 1.2 home runs per nine innings on a 31.8% hard contact rate, that's not good. And allowing a 378 wOBA to left-handed batters, that's really not good. So I'm with you. No Teheran.
Hey, but you know, last year, yes. This year, no. Just not the same guy, to be honest with you.
Not striking anyone out either.
No, no. I mean, he was a good MLB pitcher last season. And maybe it's one of those situations. I mean, I know you and I have talked about it on a couple occasions with other pitchers. The team is just a complete mess overall, and it might drag him down quite a bit. Who's the guy we talked to? Oh, A.J. Burnett.
Yeah, he checked out last year in Philadelphia. Yeah. A.J. Burnett was no longer on this planet. He had... AJ Burnett had graduated to another plane of existence. He was no longer bound for RBS citizens. Let's go to Minnesota, where we've got the Pittsburgh Pirates taking on the Twins, Charlie Morton taking on Mike Pelfrey, and the battle of the aces. 8.5 run total, essentially a pick 'em between the two. What do you see here?
Love the Pittsburgh bats. Mike Pelfrey is not very good. In Pittsburgh, they have a lot of guys that can do some damage. You know, slight park upgrade for them as well, leaving PNC. Top to bottom, really. Like Polanco, Walker, McCutcheon, Marte, Jung Kung Ho, however you pronounce his name. I like him as well.
There's been so much derision between analysts and announcers as to how to pronounce his name. I've heard people get in fights on air before about the way to pronounce his name.
He's been drawing a good lineup spot. I think he's been hitting fifth basically against righties or lefties, and a lot of good hitters in front of him. So like I said, Pirates, one of my favorite offenses to target tonight.
Yeah, Minnesota eighth overall the last 30 days, which is surprising. And the stats with Sano in the lineup are even better. I mean, that lineup is really just predicated. It's another case of one guy can change the entire complexion of a lineup. So.
Yeah, and it's just kind of what they're missing, a guy that can go ahead and bat fourth every single night and know that he has some type of power. He can hit home runs, he can hit doubles, drive in runs. It's it can go a long way.
Pittsburgh 10th overall the last 30 days, and that does not bode well for Cy Pelfrey no more. Yeah. That's what I call him. Pitching to contact doesn't allow for you to be a Cy Young candidate for the entire season. He's allowing a 330 wOBA now to both sides of the plate. This is a guy that you can take righties and lefties against.
Yeah.
And Charlie Morton owns a massive 59.7% ground ball rate, but that is where the good stats end. He's also allowing a 31.2% hard contact rate and a 387 wOBA to lefties in 27 innings pitched, which is not exactly a huge sample size, but it's been a struggle he's had over his entire career, except for 2014, I believe. And I don't expect him to get a whole lot better at this point. So I'm going to be going in with Pittsburgh Pirates bats. And your last little note, Andrew McCutchen, 6-for-14 against Cy Pelfrey.
Yeah, and the good thing for Morton is obviously I'm not endorsing playing him by any means, but obviously struggled more against lefties. The Twins just really are totally void of a power left-handed bat that can really make you pay the price. So
Eddie Rosario.
Yeah,
I love Eddie Rosario.
Yeah, I do like him. I do like him as well, but they've got him buried down there towards the bottom of the lineup when they're facing a righty. I just don't understand why they don't slot this guy in the two hole. They refuse to do that. So if they did, yeah, definitely a guy I'd be looking at. But kind of buried down there, 6th or 7th, it seems like, on most nights.
Yeah, Twins very results-oriented management. If you remember last year, Danny Santana was hitting premier lineup spots just because he was hot for a little while.
Yeah.
This should not surprise us in the slightest. And I just realized real quick, I realized that I've been making a massive mistake. You know how we call him Cy Pelfrey?
Yes.
And his name is Mike?
Yes.
You know how, like, when you were a kid and you told somebody something and they said, really? You'd go, psych? Why are we not combining Cy Pelfrey and Mike and saying psych? Is Pelfrey really doing good this year? Yeah, he's Cy Pelfrey. Really? Psych!
I like it.
Psych Pelfrey, you have now been thus dubbed. Moving forward, Oakland at the Los Angeles Dodgers, 6.5 run total here at Dodger Stadium, -120 for your boy, Brett Anderson. I'm putting that one on you, Ricky Bobby, because Brett Anderson is your guy. Tell me why you like or dislike him tonight.
Don't mind him. I really do not mind him. Same situation, just kind of going, gets the job done, nothing too flashy, avoids running into real trouble. Kind of had a bad outing last time out, now that I'm looking at things here. Only went 2.2 innings. Not sure what that's all about. I have to dig a little deeper. Nice. He's a sizable favorite here. -130, total 6.5, facing off with Sonny Gray. Gray has been good this season as well. Definitely can't pull the trigger on him in this matchup with the Dodgers. If you're going to spend up to that price range, I think a couple of the other guys that we talked about earlier on are the preferred targets. If you want to go cheap, I think Anderson is fine for an SP2. I don't think I'll pull the trigger for one starting pitching site such as FanDuel.
I think that's fair. Oakland started the season very bad versus left-handed pitching. They have moved up to 16th now, but they're the 28th overall offense last 30 days, better than only the Rays and the Cubs, who we talked about earlier. It's kind of cool how that went in sequential order. But the Athletics, the one thing about them is they don't strike out a ton, and Anderson doesn't strike out a lot of people anyways, so there's no real upside there. The Dodgers are the second overall team this year versus righties, but they had a huge lead on everyone else for a while, and they've been slowly giving it up until finally the Giants surpassed them in that category. They've essentially been a league average offense over the last 30 days. I believe they have the pieces in place to be better, and I think that's going to regress back to them being above league average, but Sonny Gray induces a lot of weak contact. I don't like Gray. I don't particularly love the Dodgers offense. For me, this one's going to be the other side. I'm taking a couple of choice Oakland right-handed batters. Please, please let Josh Fegley just bat 4th or 5th or 3rd, maybe, so I can take him.
Yeah, I figured that's where you were going. And he's been phenomenal against lefties. Same situation, kind of buried towards the bottom. They refuse to bat him higher than 6. He should certainly be higher when they're facing a lefty. He's gotten the job done all season long against that handedness of pitcher.
Yeah. Brett Anderson allowing a 3.23 wOBA to right-handed batters. Really the only wart in his profile, as he's been a very good, 3.25-ish ERA pitcher. So, Arizona at Seattle, last game on the docket. We've got ourselves a 7.5 run total here at Safeco with Hisashi Iwakuma as a -158 favorite. And the first thing I got to ask you, he's taking on Zach Godley, who just came off of a crazy awesome performance for a young guy. But Iwakuma has been getting lit up. Do you have any confidence in this -158 number that you look at in front of you?
I do not. It just continues to follow along here with the theme that Vegas just absolutely hates the Diamondbacks when they're on the road.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're seeing such a high number here. I don't think it's necessarily the fact that they really like Iwakuma or expect him to pick up the win at this type of rate. I just it's a common theme here. When they're on the road, they are huge underdogs, and I will not be touching Iwakuma, even though he's a large favorite here at -164.
Did you hear that? That's the Skip Bayless sigh. Whenever okay. Stephen A. Smith's done making this point, he, you know, I'm a fan of picking on the Diamondbacks on the road. You know, yeah, just following along with what Vegas does. I'm a little concerned about Hisashi Iwakuma. He's giving up 2.14 home runs per nine innings this year, which is obviously unsustainable. But anytime a guy with career-long home run issues starts to give up a lot of home runs, you have to be concerned, especially when he's coming back off of an injury that, you know, of his own volition, he declared, "My finger can't grip the ball." This is a guy whose entire repertoire is predicated upon control, control, control. Yeah. If he's not controlling the ball well and he has home run issues, I'm not saying he's not feeling well right now. I'm just saying there could be something here to a guy like Goldschmidt or Peralta. I know it's Safeco, but if it's across the plate, it's across the plate. They're major league hitters.
Yeah, yeah, so, no doubt. I have no problem targeting those guys in tournaments. And just going back to the game log here for Iwakuma, I mean, he's actually done pretty well his last few starts against some of the best offenses in baseball. Went to the Angels, went to Los Angeles, went eight innings, six strikeouts. Went to New York, 5.2 innings, five strikeouts. Went to the Tigers, one of the best offenses in baseball against right-handed pitching, supposedly, and seven strikeouts, seven innings.
Little jab, supposedly.
I'm not very happy with the Tigers right now.
Yeah, I can feel you there. Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's maybe getting back into form, but I'm still not. Put it this way. I'm not targeting Hisashi Iwakuma in cash games.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So maybe he's a starting pitcher, too. I don't know his prices on DraftKings, but FanDuel, I'm sticking to my dude Syndergaard at 8.8K. I mean, that's just a ridiculous price tag against the Padres at home.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal spot for him. I mean, if he can avoid the walks, he should be in line for a very fine outing. I mean, the control is a slight issue with him, but the strikeout upside in this matchup, just huge potential for a big outing here.
Last note on this game, the Seattle Mariners are the fifth overall offense in baseball the last 30 days. This stands in stark contrast to where they were just a month ago as one of the worst offenses in baseball. They've really turned it around. Do you remember when they turned it around, too? It's when we all had Trevor Bauer, Corey Kluber, that Indian series. The Mariners are really good at turning things around in one series.
So. Don't forget about the 2-3-game series against this Tigers team where they scored about 100 runs over a six-game span. Tigers, great rotation and great bullpen.
You're so tilted right now. I can feel it seething through the electrical wires connecting you and I.
I'm hurt.
Fiber right optic now. Rage is what it is right now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the slate breakdown. Hopefully we're able to help you get the plays you need to build a better lineup tonight. Our question of the day, and this one comes via our man Hoop2410. Who is your Melky Cabrera? Or I guess I could say, who is your Chris Colabello? Do you have one player that is just the bane of your existence? And not only does it tilt you that you played them for so long and they did nothing, it tilts you even more that as soon as you stopped playing them, they started destroying the world in epic fashion. You got to tell us, is there anybody in your life like that, DFS-wise?
Yeah, I'd be curious to know. I mean, obviously, it's our guy's been no secret, and Melky Cabrera, I'd love to go back and find out the day that I made the vow to not play him and match it up with his game log and see if there's any correlation, because I just feel like the day I said I'm never playing him again, the dude started playing some baseball, hitting the home runs, the doubles, the RBIs. Be curious. One day if I have enough time, I'm going to go back and I'll fill everyone in on the results.
While Hoop is busy doing that, we want you to hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Crazy Gaby. He's at Hoop2410. Let us know who your Melky Cabrera or Chris Colabello is. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Helps us out on the Google machine. Helps us out getting our iTunes rank up. We would really appreciate that. Make sure you're playing some of those awesome contests at FanDuel.com, our sponsor site. We appreciate everything they do to keep us on the air here. And, of course, check out the upcoming live shows today, 3:30 Eastern. We've got Boggs Light and Draft Cheat on the afternoon grind. 4:30, myself and Pepsi7 DFS on the Fantasy Aces Happy Hour. And 5:30, Dean and Al Smizzle hanging out on the DraftKings Grinders live show. 6:30 Eastern, EMAC and Kevin Roth WX will be on the last call, bringing you last-minute weather news. and also lineup advice up until lineups lock. 6 o'clock Eastern, Dan and Beer Makers Fan going to be on Sirius XM Fantasy. And last but certainly not least, at 8 o'clock, our PGA After Dark show with Devo Poker, RG Gibbethy, and STL Cardinals 84. Got a lot of programming for you guys tomorrow, and you've already started it off by listening to an hour and 15 minutes of Hoop and I, so just go ahead and make it an entire family day. Get the kids together, you know, tell the wife to you know, cook an early dinner, and you can check out the PGA show right after you get done with all the MLB stuff.
Yep, the regular Grinders Live MLB breakdown can be your dinner, and then the PGA breakdown, your dessert. Get the family involved.
A family that DFSs together stays together is what
yes.
I've heard.
So. Like that. I like that.
We'll see you guys later. Thanks again for hanging out with us. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Daily Fantasy Fix podcast. Head to rotogrinders.com and check out all of our daily fantasy content. Remember to follow us on Twitter @RotoGrinders for breaking news and expert analysis.